from the Media Factory in the South End of Burlington, Vermont. This is 99.3 FM WBTV LP Burlington, streaming online at 993wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro. Today on Write the Book, you'll hear an interview from the archives with Tari Prinster, cancer survivor, yoga teacher, and author. Tari Prinster has been a yoga teacher since 2003. She's the founder of Yoga for Cancer, Y4C, three digits, Y4C, and the Retreat Project, which is a nonprofit, businesses that bring together specialized yoga cancer survivors through classes and retreats. She also leads teacher training programs to help enable yoga teachers to best adapt all styles to fit the unique needs of cancer patients and survivors. In Tari's own words, she recounts her background with yoga and cancer. When I was 50, I started a yoga practice on a hunch it would ease menopausal symptoms. It did. That was 16 years ago. Today, I am an example that it is never too late to start, never too late to change. Yoga made me feel younger and stand straighter. I sleep better, my weight is good, and my bones are strong. I found yoga a powerful tool to manage the daily challenges of cancer treatments, as well as the side effects and lifelong vulnerabilities they create. I discovered yoga was more than a way to stay healthy. It gave me emotional support and spiritual comfort so needed during recovery. Tari Prinster has developed a system of yoga poses and sequences based on needs of cancer survivors, and that is largely what her book, Yoga for Cancer, A Guide to Managing Side Effects, Boosting Immunity, and Improving Recovery for Cancer Survivors is about. When I spoke with Tari, I began by expressing surprise at something that she writes about early in the book. She says that when she had her cancer diagnosis, she started doing research and there was not a lot of information available at the time about the specific health benefits of yoga for cancer survivors, and that is what started her down this path. I asked her if we could start by talking a little bit about that.
That is precisely the point that started me down the path of creating this methodology. There seems to be a natural connection. Certainly, the way we understand both yoga and cancer now today in the year 2015. In the year 2000, when I was starting my cancer journey, the information on and acceptance of both yoga and cancer were in a very different world space.
Yeah.
Alternative methods of healing and were not as favored by the Western medical professions, and the skepticism that existed then has certainly changed and become more accepting.
Right.
At the same time, the world of yoga, I think, was also, if you look around at the documents on cancer, there's many types of research that were going on at that time of yoga applied to, say, heart disease or other kinds of more skeletal muscular kinds of disorders as an aid to healing in that way. Mm-hmm. But in terms of cancer, it was a kind of a hands-off thing, and I think that comes mostly from everybody not really understanding what cancer is, having some misconceptions about it, and therefore not any concrete answers.
Yes.
So that's, I think, explains where we were in the year 2000. And the huge difference between then and now, it makes me very happy.
Yeah.
And I'm delighted to add my research in my book to that knowledge and understanding.
Yeah, well, and this book is so good for people who perhaps don't have a science background, don't have a yoga background, and yet find themselves in this position that they never expected to be in. It just seems like a wonderful resource. I liked that early in the book you compared the feeling of hearing your own initial cancer diagnosis to falling off a swing as a child. I thought this was such a great analogy because being in that moment
one must feel like a child, just absolutely uninitiated and all alone. And I just, I loved that analogy, and I wondered if you could talk about it a little bit.
Oh my goodness, you go way back to my childhood. I mean, and thank you for noting that, because to me that was, I grew up in a rather isolated part of the country 70 years ago in western Colorado, and lived in a small town, but also a distance from the town itself out in the country. So I didn't have a lot of playmates. I didn't have neighbors next door. And my father built off of our garage these climbing bars. We called them the monkey bars. I don't know what they call them.
Yeah, that's what we called them too.
Yeah. And I would come home from school and just hang out in the backyard by myself, hanging by my knees and, you know, whatever the kids do at that age. And I did frequently fall off and have that panic moment where, you know, you just knock the wind out of you. And remember, you know, scrambling into the house to my mother, and that moment of her, of panic that was inside of me, and then her soothing voice to say, you know, calm down, relax, mm-hmm. Now just take a deep breath, mm-hmm. and everything will be fine. Count to 10. And so when I did get diagnosed with cancer, I made that connection of being alone, being without my breath, and there was that magic aha moment of how vulnerable one feels in those situations, and where do we turn, what right. do we look for, but our mother's comfort, and also that way of finding our breath, mm-hmm. finding a way to just be present. And isn't this what yoga is all about?
Yes. Let's talk a little bit about your background in yoga. You've been teaching yoga for many years now, but you didn't start as a student until you were already all grown up. So let's talk a little bit about that.
My personal yoga practice started when I was 50. Uh-huh. And as I say in the book, and I'm quite unabashed saying this, I started doing yoga for all of the wrong reasons. I was going through menopause, mm-hmm. and even though I had been very athletic all my life, never been overweight or anything like that, I was always still pretty body conscious. Mm-hmm. And when I started menopause, I noticed that I was losing my posture and just looked old.
Yeah.
And I didn't like that. And what I did notice is that people who did yoga were able to hold themselves up nicely, correct their posture, and carry themselves with grace.
Yes.
So I thought, gee, you know, all of the other sports things that I do are really making me feel not graceful. And I want to try something new. And that's what I did. Mm-hmm. Along with it came all sorts of other benefits of the yoga practice that helped me through my menopausal years. I was able to feel that my bones were getting stronger because of the yoga, that my mood swings were not quite as extreme because of the yoga. And so it wasn't just for the sake of standing up straight and not looking old. Mm-hmm. It seemed to manage those other menopausal symptoms that are uncomfortable.
Right.
In terms of my choosing to do yoga over other things, that was vanity, totally, totally. And that's what I mean. I chose to do yoga for all the wrong reasons.
Okay, okay. One of the comments you make in the book, which I thought was so interesting, was you started to notice that young people with poor posture looked old too. And that was really interesting to me. You know, I think we're always told when we're little to, you know, stand up straight and have good posture. And when people don't, they do. They look not well, and maybe old also.
Well, that's part of the reason that we focus so much on spinal alignment in yoga. When we are losing our posture, whether it's the folding forward over a computer all day long, and then losing that space that we need in our chest to expand our lungs and breathe properly.
Right.
Or if it is losing our posture for other spinal misalignments, and then we begin to develop misalignment in our hips, problems with our knees, all of that kind of lateral imbalance that creates other kinds of ways that prevent us from exercising as well as standing up straight. So yes, young people, you don't have to be old to look old. Young people can look old because they are unhealthy.
Right.
And those are two very important things in terms of staying healthy is allowing yourself that breathing space. And then also, you know, keeping spinal alignment so that other imbalances in the body do not prevent us from being active.
Yeah, yeah. And then the other question that I had for you was, how long after you started practicing yoga were you diagnosed with cancer?
I think it was 8 years. If I can't account correctly, but certainly it was after I had had a fairly decent and strong yoga practice.
Which is good. That must have been very helpful to you at the time.
Well, as I say, I started doing yoga for the wrong reasons, and it really worked well for me. I saw changes in my body very quickly.
Right.
And made it into a daily practice, a daily habit. But when I started doing my chemo treatments, I discovered a part of yoga that I had been kind of ignoring before. And that was the part of yoga that leads us to both a meditation practice and understanding how to really use that breath that I lost falling off the monkey bars to calm myself down and really be at peace with the choices that I was making, which was to go through a Western prescription of handling my cancer.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty scary. Cancer's scary. Chemotherapy is scary. But then, you know, I was scared the first time I went up into a headstand.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I learned something about myself in the process, which was that I could face those fears and get to the other side without sort of, I guess, being afraid, rather feeling like I was giving myself permission to take care of myself.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the chemo was doing for me. Mm-hmm. And I had to make friends with that process and with it. So I discovered that yoga helped me. The yoga meditation, the yoga breathing was something that allowed me to face those fears.
Yeah.
And get to the other side, knowing I was doing this for myself.
Yeah. Something you just said reminded me of a question I had or a comment I had. And it was interesting to me, this book does not suggest that people do yoga in place of Western medicine treatments, but to use yoga to improve their health in recovery. Would you say that's about where that falls?
Yes, definitely it is. As I just said, in recovery and through treatments,
mm-hmm.
was the intention of the book, that it be a guide, it be a self-guide. As I said, you know, I was doing this for myself, And the one thing that we do experience as cancer patients is that loss of control of our bodies. We surrender it to, you know, whoever, whatever treatments we decide to do, and to the Western medical model. And that's an uncomfortable place to be. So knowing that there is something one can do for themselves was really a powerful feeling in my experience, and I wanted others to feel that they could take control of their lives and let that be a guide both through treatments and in recovery. We lose so much, not just control, but body parts, functionality, range of motion, and we are constantly left with the fear of recurrence. So I wanted this to be something not just that a survivor would go to a class where they can be inspired and led by a trained yoga teacher, but also that they could pick it up and do it for themselves. Mm-hmm. But recovery, a guide to recovery, is one of the focuses of this book. I'm hoping also in finding those who have picked it up who are maybe not necessarily survivors, or people who've asked me questions. Yoga for cancer, does that mean that yoga can be a way to reduce the risk of cancer? Is that what you're saying with this book? And I think that's another part of it, which is that even if you have not been touched by cancer, the information in the book is helpful for those who do have a yoga practice or thinking about doing a yoga practice and may have concerns about cancer being in their family background or whatever, that the methodology addresses how to lower the risk factors as well.
Mm-hmm. You said something a minute ago about, you know, people who have been through cancer, possibly sometimes they're you know, having surgery where they end up losing body parts. This reminded me of the story at the beginning of the book in the foreword by Cindy Lee. She tells the story of your duct tape exercise to help people understand how it feels to possibly be in a different physical place than you are. So you were using duct tape to limit range of motion and to make people think about how it must feel. Can you talk about that? I thought that was really creative and interesting.
Yeah, it's one thing to feel compassion for someone else who is in a situation where they have lost range of motion, or and it doesn't have to be cancer. It can be any kind of disability.
Mm-hmm.
We have compassion for those who are not as abled as we are, and then go with that person to try to help them without understanding what it feels like to be in their body. Is sort of like, you know, trying to pretend that you really understand what it's like to be deprived of a freedom that we know and enjoy in this country. So I created that particular exercise with that in mind.
And so you put duct tape on around somebody's abdomen to kind of constrict it. Is that what you were doing?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. So we would, or, you know, what does it feel like now? This is one for me that I've always been challenged by is, how do I help someone as a yoga teacher, who has, 100 more pounds on their body than I do?
Mm-hmm.
How can I really explain to someone how to do a forward fold if, you know, they are 100 pounds heavier than I am? And I'm quite thin, so folding forward is not as, although, and also having fairly long hamstrings is not a difficulty. So, yeah, wrapping a pillow around my belly with duct tape to imagine what that would feel like brings it into the arena of, now I can really understand what it feels like, and my instructions will be very different and much more sensitive.
I liked that. I just thought that there's so many different people who can learn from that sort of example of just sort of like, let's put ourselves in somebody else's shoes before we try to advise them.
BKS Iyengar has a quote him frequently, advice that he gives to yoga teachers, do not imagine that you already understand those who come to you for help.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to find ways of putting ourselves in the role of the other. And this has been, and I still use this technique a lot in my teacher trainings.
You have, you make a comment in the book that I thought was great. It's, I think it's actually, you put it in quotes. You have a lot of quotes sprinkled through the book that are attributed to various people, including yourself. And one of them that was yours was, "Hope is not a plan." I liked that, and I wondered if you could talk about it a little bit.
Well, that was another one of those aha moments.
Yeah.
And I think it came more from talking to people, not only those who have cancer, but so many people who come to me and talk about their relatives or their friends who have cancer and ask me, well, what can I do to help them? What can I do to be hopeful that they will, be cured of their cancer, whatever. And hope seems to be also the one big word that is put out in talking about cancer, is that you can go to any medical prescription and they cannot promise that they will cure you. They can only give you hope that it will cure you. And no one can eat all of the kale in the world and take all of your antioxidant suggestions in the hope that you will not get cancer. So no matter what, hope seems to fill everybody's idea, because we know so little about what cancer is and how it happens. And so at one point it just occurred to me that, you can hope and hope and hope all you want, but it's an empty effort.
Right.
Unless you have a plan.
Yeah. That boiled it down so nicely, and it doesn't mean that you shouldn't have hope, and it doesn't mean that your plan is necessarily going to be a guarantee of recovery, but it's better to have a plan than just hope with nothing else.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, I like that. I'm curious, in your practice as a yoga teacher, and I'm sure many of your students are cancer survivors or patients, have you ever come up against any resistance from medical practitioners, either Western or alternative or anybody, about your yoga for cancer practice?
Oh, resistance. No, I have not come up against any resistance that it would not potentially be helpful. I gotta say, in the beginning there was blank faces, and which I thought reflected skepticism. But I think that we've come further now, where there's much more acceptance of yoga not being, it was, in some ways considered a, coming out of religious sort of sensibilities and not something that is, it has a large acceptance as a relaxation technique, which I think is how it is commonly seen, and therefore can't be harmful. My methodology, I want to shift to being more than a relaxation technique, and to bring it into the more physical aspects of what we are actually doing on a cellular level in our bodies, not only with the breathing, which is critical, but also with the movement, that we are having an effect physically on our body, not just in a on the nervous system relaxation level, and that is what I think where I separate myself away from the yoga practices that might have been shunned or looked at skeptically in the past. Mm-hmm. And I think that I'm hoping, and this is certainly my goal and my wish, that the Western medical model will see the physical aspects of it and incorporate that in as well to what they are suggesting, along with all the other research that shows that cancer resistance is enhanced by exercise. There is an exercise component to a yoga practice. It's not all just the mental process of relaxing and the mental process and the physical aspect of lying in a supported position. Mm-hmm. But there is a real strong need to move the body and move the body in a way that is supported by the breath, and that all this is very much building a stronger immune system on a cellular level deep inside the body. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit more about the book itself. The book is structured in using personal stories, science, and instruction. Also, these illustrations that aid the instructive part of it. So I wondered how you found the right mix of adding all of these parts together to make this book. I thought it was wonderful to read because just every page seemed to have some new component that was kind of fun, you know. So,
yeah, that was certainly the idea of writing the book was bounced around in many different directions to begin with, and I had several opportunities to work with other yoga teachers or people who had strong yoga practices who also had cancer. And I knew that their stories were different than my story. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to include them in the book somehow, but I wasn't quite sure. So over the years, I asked them if they would just write something about how they used yoga, how they were using yoga, and what it meant to them in terms of their cancers.
Right.
And then collected those without knowing whether my ultimate final book would be memoirs of all sorts of people or if it would just be a part of it. Then I knew I needed to focus on whether I was writing this book for what the audience was. Was the audience going to be cancer patients and survivors or caregivers? Or was the book going to have two components to it, being both useful to yoga teachers mm-hmm. as well as someone who's never studied yoga before and had cancer? Mm-hmm. That was probably the biggest decision I had to make, and I centered on it being the audience being narrower, it seemingly, uh-huh. That it would be those who maybe had never done yoga before and were recently diagnosed or were in long-term recovery, and that it be a guidebook for them, which mm-hmm. is what I settled on. That kind of threw out the window these other stories. And so that's why I tried then to incorporate them in as sort of sidebars of mm-hmm. Examples. And most all of those interviews are from people who have who are also yoga teachers as well as cancer survivors. So that's how I mix those two together. And then their other decision was obviously this is a book of instructions. It's not just a narrative of my story and other people's stories. It is a book of instructions mm-hmm. of a methodology. Developing the methodology and clarifying it, choosing the actual number of poses that were in the book was a Herculean task. It could have been as few as a lot of instruction books are of, you know, 12 to 20 poses, or it could have been the over 100 that I actually do have. So I settled on, due to the size of the book, 53 of them, I think. Then the other problem I had to face was that a lot of these poses, yoga poses, are not just poses, they're sequences.
Right.
You go from one pose to another. And it's great if you can do it, put a video in a book, but I couldn't. So I needed to illustrate going from one pose to the next, the starting, middle, and ending, and explain that. And that's not really possible with a photograph either, much less a video in a book. So I decided on illustrations for that reason, because I wanted to show the sequentialness of the sequences. And in addition to that, I was quite concerned not to use photographs, as many other yoga books do, because photographs show, I have to decide who's going to be in that photograph.
Mm-hmm.
And it's way too easy for people using this book as a guide to either identify or not identify with that human being.
Exactly, yes.
So I wanted the book to not be intimidating to those who may not have perfect bodies. And I decided that the illustrations should not, would be the best way to not distract from that. And that I could also control how clear they were in terms of alignment. However, we did put in photographs, and I wanted to add in that human element of pictures of people. And these are all students from my classes, and none of them have perfect bodies.
Mm-hmm.
But they, I think that there's an image there for anyone and everyone, except that there's no males, images in there, that there is something for everyone to identify with and, adds that human quality, that human factor that I think is so important.
Okay. Great. One aspect of the writing of the book that I really enjoyed when I realized it was you write of your yoga practice and your teaching in the present tense. You write of your own cancer experience in the past tense. And it was very subtle, but it was very beautiful. Once I realized that, I was like, she has put her cancer behind her, you know?
To a large extent, there needed to be different voices in this book.
Mm-hmm.
And I do explain that, you know, I mean, to go from the very personal telling my story to then being the teacher and the instructor are two different voices.
Uh-huh.
And I needed to tell my story in some way, but I also did not want the book to be a memoir, at least not my memoir. I wanted it to be a guide, as it says on the cover. It's a guide. It's not my personal story of my cancer journey.
Mm-hmm.
Way too many of those books out there. I wanted to make a transition to where I leave my voice as my memoir, as my cancer, and then start the voice of the instructor.
Right, right. Which works so well because people can relate to you, but it's not like this is a book about somebody else. This is a book that is about everybody who reads it, really. So
thank you, Shayla. That's really, yeah. I have to say, too, to that regard, it is in my teaching, my actual teaching, that I did that very, in the very beginning, really consciously. I would not talk about my cancer in introducing a class or whatever. It was because I felt that if I was going to be a teacher, I needed to relate to, and it goes back to the duct tape idea, what was going on in somebody else's situation, not what I was feeling or thinking, so that they are not projecting on me. Mm-hmm. And it was years and years and years. I never even would say, you know, I'm a cancer survivor, and then leave it at that. I didn't say what kind, where, or anything. And years later, some of my students came up to me and said, you know, well, what kind of cancer did you have? You never talked about it. And I thought, great. But the other thing about that is my instructional style is to find analogies, which you may or may have not noticed throughout the book, analogies that connect yoga and cancer. Mm-hmm. In some ways, they seem so different. And it is definitely joining those two worlds and our thinking around those two worlds that I think is very important as far as the future goes. We know that neither one of them is going to go away.
Mm-hmm.
We hope that they can meld together a little better in our understanding so that yoga for cancer can become a tool that everyone uses, not just someone who's been touched by cancer.
Okay. I have a friend who's a survivor of lung cancer, and I remember after her treatments, she talked about suffering from what's called cancer brain. And I wondered if you can talk about yoga and that side effect from going through cancer.
Yes, it's commonly called chemo brain.
Chemo brain, that's what it was, not cancer brain. Yeah, chemo brain.
Chemo brain, and it could be cancer brain, because I think the phenomenon of chemo brain affects those who maybe have not had chemotherapy. And it really does go to that whole concept that after cancer, life never goes back to normal, really.
Yeah.
The uncertainties and the impermanence of life take on a whole new value. Uncertainty becomes your constant companion. Mm-hmm. And that, in some people, may be a distraction that they have on a daily, hourly basis, even though they're long out of treatment, or it's just something that we never quite get a handle on, and it might come up intermittently. But I think that when we are faced with the idea that death is not an abstraction. It is. It's something that you are that we are born to, mm-hmm. and we need to factor that into our daily lives to really understand how to live with it. Mm-hmm. So, I think that the chemo brain is a broader sweeping term. Certainly when someone is going through chemotherapy, I don't want to say call it altered states of mind, but there's a very strong emotional component. You are feeling weak. Your whole immune system is compromised on a very physical basis. The body is thrown into disequilibrium. Mm-hmm. That can cause extreme fatigue, mental confusion, and all sorts of really concrete physical things happening in your body. However, when one completes chemotherapy, those lingering effects may also be there. Mm-hmm. And and as I said, I think that if you want to call it cancer brain,
I just misspoke, but
but no, I like it because, as I said, I feel that people who have not had chemotherapy can also suffer from those same feelings and anxiety. Now, let's relate that then to yoga.
Yeah.
And where part of our practice is letting go of all of those distractions so that we can sit on the mat with a centeredness, a peacefulness, and just be who we are and where we are, and not have to be anything other than what is going on right on that mat. And I think that those kinds of skills are skills that we learn, and they can be applied in moments of anxiety, whether it is waiting for a revisit with a doctor for a checkup, or waiting in traffic. These are moments when we practice yoga, when we practice mm-hmm. being in ourselves, who we are, how we are, and at that moment. And someone who has been through chemotherapy or been given the challenge of dealing with a cancer diagnosis, falling off their monkey bars and losing their breath, can use these skills and tools and techniques that we learn from mindfulness on our yoga mat.
Yeah. I wonder if we can talk a little bit about how certain poses in yoga might be harder for people who have suffered various types of surgery or other effects from cancer. I know you talk at one point in the book about wrist protection for people who have lymphedema. Is that how you say that?
Yes, lymphedema.
Yeah. So I'm sure people must come to you to learn about alternative positions for their own unique situations. And I just wondered, like when you offer advice to people, are you coming up with positions on your own, or is there some sort of association of yoga practitioners that comes up with recommendations for people, or how does that work?
Well, no, there's no association that comes up with postures or suggestions or modifications for cancer per se, or that was what I found completely lacking in the yoga world,
right,
back in 2000. And I'm hoping that I pretty much have come up with some solutions. Certainly, the more I practice, the more I do my teacher trainings, I am finding that people are really looking for these answers because they don't exist. Mm-hmm. And however, there are certainly there's a lot of information within the physical therapy world and in the other medical professions that deal with the long-term side effects and even short-term side effects of cancer treatment. And lymphedema is one of those. The Lymphedema Society is one that deals with a condition that is caused by most frequently caused by the removal of lymph nodes in the body due to various kinds of cancer surgeries. It is in the lymph nodes that we look for signs of the cancer having metastasized. Mm-hmm. And so when those nodes are removed, the lymph system becomes compromised. And I say lymphedema can also occur from other situations, not just the removal of lymph nodes. But in any case, it is a very painful and irreversible condition, which is the buildup of lymph fluid primarily in the extremities of the body, in the legs or the arms, hands and feet. Or it can be spontaneous in other parts of the body too, but it is a serious condition. And unless treated properly, it really is lifelong and irreversible. So often I have students come to me with that particular concern, that they have been misinformed that weight-bearing is something that we do in yoga, and that weight-bearing is going to cause lymphedema. And what I have done is work with lymphatic massage therapists in looking at the kinds of things that they do in lymphatic massage, and also showing them what I do in the yoga sequences that I have created, and asking them to give me feedback on if they are beneficial, or if they also would put anyone at risk if they were to do these particular postures. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, there has fortunately been a fair amount of research, not on yoga necessarily, but on exercises and things that people with lymphedema, there's been actual research showing that weight bearing, going to the gym and lifting weights, has a positive effect on someone who has lymphedema and can reverse the side effects. So with that information, combining those sources with what I do, it's very comforting for my students who have that concern to come into class and hear that weight-bearing is not going to put them at harm and, in fact, will be very beneficial. Then I give them scientific reasons why, what is happening to move the lymph, how we do move the lymph with the things that we do in yoga, both in terms of physical movement and in terms of breath movement, and in terms of using the science of science principle of gravity, reversing the lymphatic flow. So there are many things that they can do themselves and that we talk about in scientific terms that, but I think your question, if I go back to it, is are there already existing organizations that look at these and make these recommendations? No, not in terms of yoga, certainly in terms of other fields of research.
Okay, great. Where can people find the book, and where do you practice yoga?
The book is on sale in all Barnes & Noble stores.
Okay.
It's also on sale in Amazon. It can be bought off my website at y4c.com. Y4C standing for Yoga for Cancer. Right. And where do I do yoga? Where do I practice yoga?
Yes.
Well, I practice yoga in New York City in various studios in New York City, and also in Stowe, Vermont, when I am there at the Yoga Barn in Stowe.
Okay.
And I'm also teaching at various studios in New York City, where I teach Yoga for Cancer classes. The list of those classes and where they can be found is also on my website, y4c.com.
Okay.
And that's y, the numeral 4c.com.
Okay.
They change from time to time, so it's best to check the listing online. I'm also, when I am in Vermont, I do teach at the Yoga Barn in Stowe.
Okay.
The program that I have created in teaching this methodology to yoga teachers is quite broad and available across the country in various times throughout the year, and also will be available online very shortly. And if any yoga teacher is interested in that, to also go to the website and look at the schedule of yoga teacher trainings, because I would love to invite them to attend one of the special trainings.
Oh, cool. All right. Wonderful. That's great to know. I wondered if you can offer any advice from your experience of writing Yoga for Cancer. I'm going to say the whole thing. Yoga for Cancer, a guide to managing side effects, boosting immunity, and improving recovery for cancer survivors. Do you have any advice from your experience of writing this for writers who are working on books that might combine health and wellness and maybe a little bit of memoir, their own experience? Anything that you think of that you could offer advice?
I did not consider myself a writer in any regard whatsoever when I first started this book. I thought that I would need to hire someone to be a ghostwriter because I felt so insecure in my own skills at writing. And I wasted a lot of time and some money on going down that path, finding someone who would ghostwrite. And in the process, I learned that it really was not possible, that I needed to just sit myself down and just sort of like staring down my fears, staring down the eyes of the tiger of cancer. I had to stare down into the eyes of, you are a writer. And so I would say that trusting that process and taking it as a practice, just as we do a daily yoga practice. And that was the only way I got through this, was to set aside and make everyone in my life and my environment understand that those hours every morning I was not to be disturbed, and I would sit with myself and write. I think that that's the first suggestion that I would make, that it did help, though. I mean, I must say that in working with two ghost writers, I did begin to get a feel for how to structure the book, and know that I also found my voice. There were suggestions of it being structured one way or another, and hearing someone else structure my book made it really clear, or clearer, right, what I wanted the structure to be.
Yeah.
So, just to say that, you know, all was not lost in having taken that path first on. And then I guess the what you mentioned in terms of the two different voices, that writing my story and then writing the methodology also took on, all right, concrete separate times. And I wasn't sure which one to start with first. And to tell you the truth, I should have started with my story, but I did not. And it didn't create a problem in the end. I think it actually made it a little bit more cohesive. But for some reason, writing the methodology, writing the instructions, seemed, or the science behind the yoga seemed easier. And so I started there.
Okay.
But then once I did start on my story, that kind of flowed pretty nicely. So I guess that's another suggestion. If it is intimidating, put it aside.
Yeah.
And start from where you feel your strength and your confidence.
Yeah. That's good advice, because you can always restructure it once it's written, right? And move things to where they feel like they should be.
That is true.
Yeah.
That is true.
Yeah. Well, Tari, I really enjoyed talking to you. I really enjoyed your book, Yoga for Cancer, A Guide to Managing Side Effects, Boosting Immunity, and Improving Recovery for Cancer Survivors. It's published by Healing Arts Press. Tari Prinster, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you, Shayla. I really enjoyed talking with you. You led me down a very interesting path of questions. And I hope that some of the things that I have said have been both inspirational and helpful to others who are writing books.
From the Media Factory in the South End of Burlington, Vermont, this is 99.3 FM WBTV LP Burlington. Streaming online at 993wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Tari Prinster. You can learn more about her work at her website, y4c.com, which stands for Yoga for Cancer. It's just the three digits, y4c.com. I would love your feedback about Write the Book. Let me know if you'd like me to interview certain authors or if you have events to announce. Be sure to tell your friends about the show and about the podcast site, which is writethebook.podbean.com, where you can get all the archived episodes. And literally, that's over 500 individual episodes. New and recent episodes of Write the Book are available wherever you get your podcasts. And you can just subscribe to have new ones sent to your podcast app. You can also access the podcast and link to our social media presence at my own website, which is shelaughswithoutus.com. If you like the show, please rate it where you find it and talk about it with people who might enjoy it. Up next at 5, stay tuned for Feminist Frenzy, the radio show with a feminist agenda. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro. You've been listening to Write the Book. This is 99.3 FM WBTV LP Burlington, Vermont. Streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. Stay well and have a great week.